Look around you wherever you are right now as you listen to this. Over 13% of the people you see are going hungry right here in the United States. That includes 13 million children and 5 million senior citizens, according to the nonprofit Feeding America. Around the world, about 800 million people, almost three times the population of the United States, think about that, go hungry every day. And an additional one of every three people suffers from malnutrition, which could lead to stunted growth and serious health problems. At the same time, one-third of the world's food production is thrown out and goes to waste. That's 1.3 billion tons of food, people. If the hungry people can access the wasted food, we would solve world hunger. I mean, this just makes sense, right? That's exactly what the United Nations has set a goal to do. And today, we're going to talk with a creative corporate executive who is on the front lines of addressing this challenge. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, where we help you live green, work green, and earn green. I'm Joan Michelson. We are talking innovation with top leaders and thinkers in energy and sustainability, and those who are transforming our world. The United Nations World Food Program predicts this will get worse, with an additional 2 billion people going to bed hungry by 2050. Think about that. Why do people go hungry? Hunger is tied to poverty. People don't have the money to buy enough food. But there are also secondary causes, including climate change and the resulting severe weather events that destroy crops, and other causes like soil depletion from pesticides, gender inequality that keeps girls and women from getting an education and being able to work. But one of the top issues of food waste in the United States is that people throw out perfectly good food. This is insane. So what can we do about it? Today, we're going to find out with one of the top corporate executives tackling this challenge. I'd like you to meet Haley Lowry. Haley is the Global End-Use Marketing and Sustainability Director for Dow. Dow is 122 years old. That's amazing. Think about that. It's a 122-year-old company that makes the chemicals, plastics, and technologies that go into making a lot of the products we use. Haley has spent her entire career at Dow, I think, we'll find out, and has approached these issues through a business lens, because guess what? She's not an engineer. But we'll hear more about that during the show. Dow has been taking a leadership role on sustainability issues and social impact the past 10 years or so, maybe longer, she'll probably correct me, and investing $1 billion in environmentally beneficial products across the board. And we can get into those a little bit later, perhaps, as well. So welcome to Green Connections Radio, Haley, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Joan, for having me.
You're welcome. Feeding America says that, and I'm going to quote here a little bit, by some estimates, nearly half of the food grown, processed, and transported in the U.S. goes to waste, unquote. They said the two biggest culprits are what stores and restaurants sell us and what we do with it when we get home. 52 billion pounds of food is wasted by stores and restaurants. That's insane. How much of this is due to packaging and how much is due to poor allocation of food resources, like serving people too much at a restaurant and then throwing it out?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, there's a percentage that's thrown out there about, you know, one-third is consumer-driven and two-thirds is really industrial-driven behind the store shelves. And, you know, I have an interesting story that was presented to me. Part of my role, I sit on the board of the Houston Food Bank and had an opportunity to really interact with a visionary there. And he challenged me and he said, Haley, we would love to feed our clients or those in need. We would love to feed them more nutritious products. And we can't find enough produce and get the produce at the shelf life that it needs to be to get to our clients. And so this is a challenge that I took on personally and said, okay, how can we use packaging to solve some of these issues? And it really was a groundbreaking a development in what we created through the Produce Rescue Center, which I would love to tell you more about.
Yeah, tell us what the Produce Rescue Center is since you brought it up.
Sure, no problem. So the Produce Rescue Center is a program that we created with the Montgomery County Food Bank, where we rescue produce. Instead of going to a landfill, you would send a truckload of produce to the produce rescue center. If you're Kroger, or if you're a Walmart, or if you're a retailer, you may not be able to accept a truckload of produce where more than, you know, 10% of the produce is bad in that truckload. And so if you bring it to the produce rescue center, you can sort and you can take the bad produce and you can compost it, and the good produce, for that makes sense, you can package it. And what we found is that we've actually been able to rescue 2 million pounds of produce over the past 9 months. 80% of that we saved. We packaged some of that, which extended the shelf life for 20 days. So if you extend the shelf life for 20 days, that means you can feed more people. You can get the product to people in longer distances. And that helps address the hunger issue. And it helped the food bank address their issue of feeding their clients more nutritious products.
Well, that's cool. I like that. But let me ask you a question. When you say that the packaging extends the food life to 20 days, does that mean that, let me put it this way, how does the consumer know that it can last longer? Because, you know, packages have sell-by dates and use-by dates on them. And most people follow those and then throw things out if they're past an expiration date. So how does changing the packaging midstream affect what date shows up and how they know when to toss it?
Yeah, I think this specific example, I definitely recommend following your use-by dates and sell-by dates. And sometimes those can be over-advantageous, but from a food safety standpoint, the manufacturers put the dates on there that need to be put on there. And in this particular product, we're actually not printing any dates on it. It is managed by the food bank, and it allows them to be able to reach clients that are further distances away. So, you know, they have pictures of what is safe and what is not safe and when something is bad or when something is good.
Oh, okay. So they're educating people on what to look for and what isn't. By the way, I don't know if you guys have this in Houston, and I should say that Haley is joining us by Skype today, by the way. But in Washington, D.C., we have an organization called DC Central Kitchen, which I've interviewed their folks as well. And what they do is they collect what sounds like the leftover or the bruised vegetables that you're talking about locally from stores that can't sell them. And they also collect food that's left over in the kitchen of a restaurant that was never served. And then they take it back to their kitchen and they have their folks make new meals out of that food. And then they serve it they feed shelters and in some cases schools. Does Houston have something like that?
Yeah, that's actually brilliant. I've seen several different apps and programs that exist all throughout the country. I think Feeding America even has one where they try to source produce that might have been left over from a restaurant, but that is perfectly good to a local food bank in need. So it's just really connecting the supply and the demand together. So I know Feeding America is working on creating an app for many different cities in the U.S. They have it in a few currently today.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah, you can follow up with me offline. And if you like, I can put you in touch with those folks because it's a great idea. They also, the people who do the cooking are also people who have been struggling. They're usually people who have been homeless or are former incarcerated folks and people like that who are not always the first to get employed, shall we say, when they've been looking for a job.
Yeah, that's great. Job creation, too.
It is. And it's a full, the whole, every aspect of what they do, you know, is giving back and using. It's very good. I love it. But let's talk about the packaging a little bit. I understand that, you know, what's the packaging when you say that the leftover vegetables and bruised fruit or whatever is getting packaged differently? Is that your flexible packaging concept that Dow invented, or is that being packaged in a different way? How is that being packaged?
Yeah, it's being packaged in a standard polyethylene package. And this is a technology that does exist in the marketplace. And it just helps basically, if you think about a piece of produce like a living organism, it breathes and it needs to breathe in a certain way. And so the package helps maintain the moisture barrier, the oxygen barrier rates that keep it fresh at the longest period of time that it can be.
So, but that's still plastic. So is that like putting more plastic into the planet, or is that coming from recycled materials, or where is that coming from?
Yeah, plastic is a very valuable source of material. And it's something that, I mean, Dow makes a lot of these products and for flexible packaging. And nothing can be added without understanding the true circular economy aspect of that. So packaging should be recycled. It shouldn't be sent to the landfill. And we have many different programs that we're working on in the industry for this. And a few of those have been the Hefty Energy Bag is a program that I'd love to talk to you more about. But I guess just back on that topic real fast, there was a recent report from TrueCost that said that the environmental cost of using plastics in consumer goods packaging is 4 times less than it would be if plastics were replaced with alternative materials. And so plastics are a very highly valued material. It's just important that we make sure that it doesn't end up in oceans and it doesn't end up in landfills and it doesn't end up in the environment, that it's being recovered, reused, recycled, and reduced for what it is protecting.
Mm-hmm. How would a consumer know to keep this produce longer? I mean, are they instructed when they get these newly packaged items, or that they of how long they can keep it, or how does the person who gets it know?
Yeah, I think the big benefit really lies with the food bank. I mean, once it reaches every consumer, they're giving them a 3 to 5 days to consume the produce in that period of time. But the fact that the Produce Rescue Center has about 20 days in its logistics chain to be able to figure out, okay, where does this produce need to go? There is a group of food insecure people that are 50 miles away. How do we make sure that we can get them some produce, some fresh produce that adds to their nutritional diet? And I think this is really where we're seeing the benefit is in the logistics chain for the food bank.
Oh.
They've been able to reduce their cost of produce by rescuing it from it going to the landfill from anywhere from 18 cents down to 10 cents so far. So, it's allowed them to get a cheaper produce cost. It's allowed them to get more nutritious goods to the people in need. So those are really the big benefits that we've seen so far in this project.
Oh, I see. Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other packaging that you guys, I think, are working on. I noticed that Dow is talking about about items that are not recycled that are plastic. And I don't understand that. Juice pouches, candy wrappers, and plastic dinnerware. Why? I mean, I always put those in a recycling bin. Why are those not recycled?
Yeah, I would actually encourage you, and I've had to go through learning process on my own too, but not everything can be put into your recycled bin. That is the holy grail, is one day when we will be able to put all materials into the recycle bin. But currently right now in the U.S., a lot of the infrastructure does not exist to be able to mechanically recycle many different types of flexible packaging. They're made with high performance materials, so they may have 7, 9, 10 different layers to provide the right barrier, the right freshness, or the printability, or to make sure that it has puncture resistant. And so they are highly engineered structures. And the infrastructure just doesn't exist in North America right now, which is one of the reasons why we have collaborated with many others in the industry to work on a program called the Hefty Energy Bag. So the Hefty Energy Bag really is a program that is a significant step towards achieving long-term environmental and economic advantages and making sure that plastics don't end up in the landfill. It's taking non-recycled plastics and converting them into energy resources. And the Hefty Energy Bag is a program that really changes the way that we handle waste. You could put things like you mentioned of the juice pouches and potato chip bags and toothpaste tubes and snack bags and straws and stirrers. You can put these in the Hefty Energy Bag that are not being recycled today. And we currently have a program in Omaha, Nebraska, for the Hefty Energy Bag, and orange bags are distributed to households, and they put the items that are not recyclable today through their collection systems in that area. And then that is converted back into energy. So it's a really unique program. It's something where we have collected more than about 20,000 bags and diverted 11 tons of plastic from being used. And that's 8.6 million snack-sized potato chip bags, for example, diverting them from the landfill.
Wow, good for you. So how is it converted into energy?
It's collected through a MRF, and the MRF then sorts out the different types of plastics, and that's converted, sent to a pyrolysis unit, which is basically a chemical recycling, and it converts it back to oil or to energy.
So for those people who don't know, a MRF is a municipal, basically, a garbage collection facility.
A materials recovery facility.
There you go. I've been told that the MRFs don't really do a very good job of recycling, though, that they actually only recycle a small portion of what is brought in there to be recycled. Is that your experience?
Yeah, and I don't know if you've ever toured a MRF, but I would highly recommend it. It is an eye-opening experience to walk around what one of these facilities look like. And yes, it is true that many things cannot be recycled in the existing infrastructure that exists today. But that is one of the reasons why the Hefty Energy Bag is so important, is because it takes the non-recycled recycled items today and converts them to energy.
I'll have to check into that. Packaging is one of the biggest challenges today. I mean, we buy so many things, you know, we're a consumer-driven society, and so many things come in packaging, and a lot of times it's for safety or for security reasons. But we generate, it's a huge contribution to waste in this country and around the globe. What can we do overall with packaging to make it less environmentally toxic, if you will? And I say toxic in the sense of both landfill and water and everything else. I know there's the Sustainable Packaging Coalition, but tell us about some of the things that are being done to reduce the environmental impact of packaging, and maybe even just reduce packaging altogether.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dow is very supportive of the EPA's waste management hierarchy. I'm sure you've heard of it, but reduce, reuse, recycle, recover. And that is exactly what we have products that help promote. We have lightweight materials that allow you to downgauge and use thinner packages, but it still maintains the freshness, or doesn't, you know, you make sure that it doesn't spoil the food, for example. We also have other types of materials, such as compatibilizers, that allow for better recyclability in the process. So there are many different options in our innovation pipeline that Dow is using for this space
to help make it have packaging have less of an environmental impact. In one of your one of the pages on the Dow website, I saw a picture on the packaging information of meat in styrofoam, and styrofoam is one of the biggest challenges in this planet right now, and it's used, frankly, a lot in businesses with coffee cups, and as well as takeout food and restaurants and things like that. What do we do about styrofoam? Is Dow working on anything to create a recyclable styrofoam or do something that is less toxic?
Yeah, I mean, this is not a material that we make, but again, we are very committed to sustainability and the sustainability of all types of packaging. And that's why we're working on the energy bag program, to putting non-recyclable plastics into and to make sure that it can be recovered.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I saw that you gave a talk at, I think it was at Green Biz or one of the conferences, on the role of business today in a lot of these issues and regarding society. And we cover that a lot in the sense of brand purpose, if you will, corporate responsibility, corporate social responsibility. What's your take on what you think the role of business is in society today and how to balance the issue of making a profit while also helping people and protecting the planet?
Yeah, Jen, this is something that I'm personally very passionate about. I do believe business can be used for a force for good. I was really inspired. I tell people a lot. I was inspired by a TED Talk that was from a lady at Unilever that was titled, "You Don't Have to Quit Your Job to Make a Difference." And it was so inspiring to me because I didn't have to quit and go work for an NGO. I didn't have to quit my job and go and be a doctor. I felt like I could make a big impact in the place that I am using a corporation's resources, which are its employees. I mean, many corporations have lots and lots of employees that can be used as a force for good, as well as resources and products and innovation. And so I am a firm believer of social impact. I don't think it's just a corporate social responsibility. I think it's a way of doing business. And I do believe that companies that are going to be the ones around in the future will see this.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, especially with a company like Dow that has been historically over the 122-year history producing a lot of the chemicals and pesticides that people have questioned the environmental impact of quite a bit. But I know that's evolving also with the time. Businesses have to have crash into the profit issue. Okay, so you know a business is a business and you have to make money. I mean, you can't employ all these people if you're not making money, right? So, but there are times when making a choice to protect the environment cuts into the profit line. How is Dow going about making those decisions? Take us into the room a little bit and how those decisions are made.
Jenna, I think there's always that concern of, you know, the corporate world driving things for a profit, but these social problems have to be solved. And the companies that solve these social issues will be the ones that win the market as well. And so I think it takes innovation. And I don't, it's not just a public sector, private sector, social sector, it's all of them have to work together to solve some of these issues. So I truly believe it's going to take a lot of collaboration to solve world social problems. And that's, you know, things like the SDG goals, they cannot be solved in a vacuum. You have to work together with other companies and others who may not be just like you.
Mm-hmm. That's the sustainable development goals.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the key things that we care about at Green Connections, and obviously you do too as a woman, is women. And women are key to solving this challenge, especially because women are the ones making 85% of the consumer purchasing, especially in the U.S. and I think globally as well. But also because, according to the UN World Food Program, women are more than 50% of the folks who work in these farms. As well as those, of course, in charge of family nutrition. And now there are a lot of women entrepreneurs who are trying to do things to address these food waste and food shortage problems. How is Dow working with women specifically on this issue?
Dow is a big supporter of women in companies and diversity and inclusion. I don't know if you know, but we actually just hired a chief diversity and inclusion officer, Karen Carter, as part of our company's executive staff. And so I think this just shows the importance that we've put on women in our own company. I know I've met a few impactful women in Africa, for example, that have been social entrepreneurs, and I found ways to bring them into talk to our company to inspire those around us and really take their ideas and give them a platform for the marketplace. And so these are just a few things that I personally am doing. But yes, I'm a huge proponent of diversity and inclusion and inside of companies and also working with others.
Well, I look forward to a day when the CEO of Dow is a woman, too. Let's talk about you for a minute before I let you go. How did you get into sustainability in the first place? You've spent your whole career at Dow. But you started, I think in product development, if I'm correct, but you're obviously not an engineer. I shouldn't say obviously, obviously to you, but not to the audience. You're not an engineer. So take us back to how this all evolved for you.
Yeah, so I started in Dow about 13 years ago, and at Clemson University, that's my alma mater, in marketing and econ. And I never thought that I would go and work for Dow. It was a company that we had done a project with, and I was blown away by the programs that they had and the materials, that the innovative materials, and just how lives were enriched by the products that Dow had in its portfolio. And so it was an honor to start working for them back in the day. And, you know, my career has evolved through many different roles of marketing and competitive intelligence and product management and sales. And sustainability has been something that has always been in my heart. It's been a passion of mine. I want to make a change for good and really drive for impact. That's why I get up every morning, because I realize the impact that I can make at this company and the impact that I can make in the environment.
Okay. So, but how did you transition into the sustainability part of it from marketing and sales and product?
Yeah, I think it was an evolution and something that I had conversations with my boss about. I was working on the end-use marketing group, which is something that I currently do today, and that's working with a lot of brand owners and retailers, and sustainability is absolutely crucial for them. And so we're working through them for many years. I just developed the passion even further, and it was a natural progression.
Oh, that's good of Dow to match your passion with your work portfolio. Not a lot of companies do that. So
yeah, it's hard to do for sure.
I'm
but
sure
when you can make it work, it definitely gives you more purpose.
Cool.
Gives you more purpose.
So you just described how you've climbed the proverbial corporate ladder yourself. What do you think has worked for you at Dow and to climb the ladder? And what do you think employers can do to retain and promote more women from middle management?
I think you have to be yourself. Don't be afraid to take risks and speak your mind. I think I've always gotten encouragement from our leadership, you know, just to take these unconscious biases that you have in your mind sometimes. I mean, it is natural for me to just sit at the edge of the table or sit at the end of the table, and I don't even think about it. It's just natural. And then, you know, I see the president out of the corner of my eye, and he's looking at me like, do not sit at the end of the table again. You come here and you sit right next to me. So I think being aware of some of these things that we naturally do as women and working to get outside of these unconscious biases that we have for ourselves, to be bold, to not be afraid to say what you want, because frankly, a lot of the men are doing that anyway, and so we really need to take the risk to talk about what we want.
Okay, there's a lot I can respond to in there. First of all, a lot of times when women do speak up, they get pushed back on rather than, I mean, men don't get pushed back the same way women do when they speak boldly. I mean, a lot of times women speak up and have a bold idea, and it's either dismissed as silly or whatever, or one of the men presents it and it's taken more seriously. Have you run into anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Too many times to count, unfortunately. We have a unique way of working through that in the larger team. We've got a few women on the leadership team, actually about 5 or 6 women on the leadership team. And we have an ongoing pact that if the woman comes up with the idea and then it's just rephrased by a man, the woman will make sure that she almost references the other woman in her next talk. So by saying, oh, yes, Joan mentioned that just a second ago, and I would just want to add off of that. And I think that just helps provide, I don't know, the platform for the person who initially brought the topic up.
But what can a company do? You know, companies, there's this logjam of women in middle management, and you've managed, no, you're pushing through those barriers. What do you think the company can do? If you can put on your company hat, not just the being the, I mean, I appreciate your input as a woman. I think it's extraordinary, but companies have to take different kinds of action than they've been taking, because the numbers are of promoting women across the board anyway into senior management are not changing. So what do you think companies can do, and maybe something about what Dow is doing to advance more women that might be creative?
You know, Joan, I'm not sure that it's just a company thing. I think it's a leader. I think each one of us as leaders, we have the onus to make sure that our teams are diverse, not only diverse in gender, but diverse in nationality and diverse in thought. And so I think that is something that I have personally learned at this company. One of the initiatives that we have is when you're hiring for a job, to make sure that you have a diverse pool of candidates. You're never going to get a diverse team unless you have a diverse pool of candidates. So I think these are just some simple steps that can be done. But absolutely, it starts with leadership saying that this is important. These are the reasons why we value diversity, is because we don't want a company that just thinks all in the same way. We want a company that is going to be well positioned, and that takes diversity of thought.
Yeah. And just in closing, I want to just expand on that a little bit, because it's diversity of experience, too. And it's people who are going to kind of rock the boat. I think I spent many years in corporate America myself, and Chrysler, Deloitte, American Express, for example. And companies always, and from the research, too, companies value consensus and cultural fit and those kinds of things. And yet, Dow is an innovation-driven company. I mean, basically what you do is innovate, right? And in order to innovate, you need different ideas at the table, and you need somebody who's going to spark a different kind of conversation and say, well, that's fine, but can we flip it over and make it purple and twist it up this way, you know? So how can we help companies hire people who might not, quote, fit in, unquote, because they need that kind of spark and those kinds of diverse ideas?
Yeah, I think you also need to take a look at your teams and figure out what gaps that you're missing and hire for that gap. Instead of, you know, maybe here are the skill sets that we're looking for, it's how do we hire for that talent gap that we may have? And that's the skills-based hiring is a different way to do that. But absolutely, it takes a lot more energy to have someone on your team who challenges you constantly than if your team looked exactly like you. It takes a lot more energy, but I guarantee you the result that would come out of that is going to be much more impactful from a diverse team.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Green Connections Radio, Haley Dowry of Dow. So what did you hear Haley say? What questions do you have for her? Tweet it to us at Joan Michelson or post it on our Facebook page, and like the page while you're there, and ask to join our new private Facebook group, or email it to us at info@greenconnectionsradio.com. You can find us online on greenconnectionsradio.com, iTunes, iHeartRadio, where we come to you from today, TuneIn, Stitcher, and wherever you like to listen to your favorite podcast. I'm Joan Michelson. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.
Hi, my name is David Goldberg, president of Edge Studio, a voiceover company. We oversee professional narrators and voice actors for sales videos, training videos, telephone pre-recorded systems, commercials, web videos, and all applications requiring voiceover. And in fact, for over 20 years and in over 100 languages, we have been considered the most trusted and the friendliest leader in the voiceover industry. We're a green company with efforts toward sustainability at all of our studio locations. EdgeStudio.com. Sound people who are happy to help.